This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 27th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 153. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the big deal feature. It is on. BC is going to the polls and the mailbox on October 24th. A pandemic election in a state of emergency, thanks to John Horgan. Sounds of the week that was. I'll also award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or did Premier John Horgan undo all the goodwill that he built up since becoming Premier in July 2017? When he called the snap election on September 21st, Horgan broke the fixed elections date law. Voting was supposed to be October 16, 2021. Horgan broke the confidence and supply agreement with the BC Greens. BC had a stable minority government since July 2017. It wasn't without potholes, but it was defying the odds. Horgan put the Cullen Commission money laundering public inquiry in jeopardy. It was delayed again until after the election. If the BC Liberals score an upset, you can bet they'll shut it down to save money and save face. Horgan is also breaking the Freedom of Information law. Three First Nations say the government will not tell them if there are coronavirus cases in their territories. The law says that people must be told if there is a threat to their health and safety. And the NDP government is hiding terabytes of information about billions of dollars of spending and how poorly the NDP was prepared for the pandemic. Horgan is putting the lives of British Columbians at risk with an unnecessary election 51 weeks early. He is also putting another nail in the coffin for democracy in BC. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, new police definition of journalists may draw judicial review. Further erosion of freedom of the press in Hong Kong as Beijing moves it closer to becoming a police state. Government officials had claimed that during the violent protests last year, quote, fake journalists and rioters in disguise, end quote, hindered police. Hong Kong Journalist Association said the latest policy was a de facto licensing scheme for journalists and treated them as enemies. It is seeking legal advice on a possible court challenge. Gigi in the Japan Times. Behold, the world's smallest Rubik's Cube. Japanese toy maker Mega House Corp. will launch the world's smallest working Rubik's Cube, weighing about 2 grams and measuring 9.9 millimeters on each side. But it doesn't come with a tiny price tag. It'll set you back about $2,500 Canadian. 2020 is the 40th anniversary of the Rubik's Cube craze. It was invented in 1974 by Hungary's Erno Rubik. And ABC News Australia. Swimmer bitten on head by saltwater crocodile at Lizard Island on the Great Barrier Reef. A 2-meter saltwater crocodile attacked the man while he was snorkeling. The 33-year-old is in stable condition at Cairns Hospital, with non-life-threatening injuries. He was flown by the Royal Flying Doctor Service. Wildlife officers will travel to Lizard Island to search for and remove the crocodile. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Daily Astorian, COVID-19 strikes 77 workers at Oregon Coast Seafood Plant. Pacific Seafood used a private lab earlier this week to test the Warrenton, Oregon plant's 159 night shift workers. 77 of them tested positive. In May, an outbreak at Pacific Seafood was linked to 15 COVID-19 cases. In Nanaimo News Now, no official cause found for massive Schnitzer steel fire. Investigators couldn't determine the cause of the large Schnitzer steel fire, which required more than a dozen fire departments to put it out. The investigator couldn't dig deep enough into the cause since so much scrap metal was moved in the Schnitzer steel yard to extinguish the blaze. This was not the first major fire on Schnitzer steel property. A barge in the Fraser River caught fire twice in the fall of 2018. No official cause was found in both instances. In the Seattle Times, seafood institution Ivers temporarily closes Seattle restaurants due to COVID-19. Both Acres of Clams on the Waterfront and the Salmon House on Lake Union close September 28th. Quote, without cruise passengers, conventions, tourists, banquets, Sounders, Seahawks, and Mariner fans, and workers in the downtown offices, there are few people eating in our full-service restaurants, end quote, the company said. But the good news, walk-up windows remain open, and the chowder plant in Mukilteo will continue making soups around the clock. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
If you drink clam nectar, then really by Hector, you'll feel something new that you never felt before. Your eye will be brighter, your step will be lighter, and love and true romance will knock at your door. You'll come alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh. You'll feel something new that you never felt before. If you drink clam nectar, then really
by Hector, I'll do anything to sell a few cups of clam nectar. New that
you never. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker.News was first to report in August that Premier John Horgan was pondering a snap election for October 24th. Well, it actually happened. Horgan said that he woke up on the last Saturday of summer and decided to call an election, although evidence points to the NDP preparing for months. Horgan met with Lieutenant Governor Janet Austin on September 21st to dissolve the legislature. BC will go to the polls 51 weeks early in the middle of the coronavirus state of emergency. Horgan backed out of the confidence and supply agreement with the BC Green Party and broke the province's fixed elections date law. This is what it sounded like when Horgan announced the election date in a cul-de-sac near his home in Langford on Vancouver Island, with two green garbage cans in a yard behind him.
I want everyone to know that I've struggled mightily with this decision and it did not come easy to me. I understand that families are concerned about their loved ones and their livelihood. I know people are uncertain and worried about the future. I understand that full well. But I want to share with you why I believe in my heart that now is the time to have an election. British Columbians have worked hard to get on the right side of the COVID-19 pandemic, but we are far from out of the woods. We are not at the end of COVID-19, we're at the beginning. This pandemic will be with us for a year or more, and that's why I believe we need to have an election now. We can either delay that decision and create uncertainty and instability over the next 12 months, more speculation, more talk about what might be, or we can do what I believe is always the right thing and ask British Columbians what they think. I believe the best way forward is to put the politics behind us.
So what's at stake? Well, Horgan wants to parlay his popularity into an NDP majority in 4 more years. But it is a gamble. Dave Barrett, BC's first NDP premier, did the same thing in 1975 when he called a snap fall election after being in office for 3 years. He lost. Horgan's opponents call it a power grab. Here is Sonia Furstenow, who became the leader of the Green Party just a week earlier.
Just want to start by pointing out that we are now headed into what is a completely unnecessary election. I did meet with the Premier on Friday, reiterated that Adam and I, as a caucus, are absolutely prepared to put the best interests of British Columbians first and foremost, especially at a time when people are worried about their kids being back in school, when people are worried about their jobs, when people are worried about their housing. This is not a time when we put the interests of a political party ahead of the British Columbians who need to know that we are here to serve them. I am disappointed that this is what John Horgan has chosen to do, and I fully intend to hold him accountable for this decision as we put forward a campaign that will give people an alternative to this style of politics that puts partisanship and party ahead of the well-being and health of British Columbians.
Here is Andrew Wilkinson, leader of the official opposition BC Liberals.
John Horgan chose politics over people. For no good reason whatsoever, we're now being forced into general election that nobody in British Columbia wants except the NDP. The only reason for this general election is to try to secure the jobs of the NDP. So to make this completely clear, think about why we're having this election. It's not necessary. The goal for the NDP is to secure their own employment. So the picture here is that we've got a government that is cynical enough to put us in through a general election in the middle of a pandemic. We need leadership. We need guidance. We need to make sure that this is a province where we can all prosper, not a province where petty politics gets in the way of health and economic security.
On September 22nd, John Horgan made his first tour stop at Waterfront Park in North Vancouver to support NDP incumbent Bowen Ma. The Breaker.News was there.
Our next question is from Bob Mackin.
News. Good morning. If any member of the NDP campaign team, if a candidate, a worker, a volunteer, a contractor tests positive for COVID, will the party tell the public? And if any member of the NDP campaign, whether it's you, another candidate, worker, volunteer, is hospitalized, will you suspend the campaign?
Well, we'll conduct our campaign, as I said, following public health guidelines. And that's the commitment we've made to British Columbians, and I'm going to maintain that from now until Election Day.
You didn't give me a yes or no there.
I can't predict the health outcomes for people on my campaign or people across British Columbia. I know that we have COVID in our communities, and we have to take steps of physical distancing, which we're doing today at this press conference. We need to wear masks if we're too close to one another. We need to use the hand hygiene that Dr. Henry talks about so ably, and we need to make sure that we take steps as individuals to not just protect ourselves, but those around us. That's my commitment to British Columbians, and I'll stay fast to that.
Now, my follow-up is that this campaign, like all campaigns, is not being held in a bubble. We're out here in public today. We are physically distancing. There's also members of the public here. Back earlier this year, when the virus was less of a threat to British Columbians, the NHL wanted to come to Vancouver in a very strict, structured way and play at one venue, be behind security, no fans, behind fences, have hotels. And Dr. Bonnie Henry and your office were involved with the talks with the NHL, who eventually did go elsewhere to Edmonton because BC was being that strict. Now, you told us yesterday that you did not consult with Dr. Henry, and she said that you did not consult with her. Why were you so active in due diligence for the National Hockey League, but not for the NDP? Does the NDP have a different set of rules than the NHL?
Not at all. Look, I talk to Dr. Henry regularly. I am participating in briefings with her all the time. I look at the modeling as the public does. Dr. Henry gave me all of the information I needed to make the decision that was mine alone. Dr. Henry has worked with Elections BC, worked with the federal government, worked with other public health officials across the country to ensure that wherever elections may take place, whether municipally, provincially, or federally, that public health guidelines are in place. That is her job. She made it clear to me that an election could be conducted safely. The decision to call an election was mine and mine alone, and I take full responsibility for that.
Then on September 23rd in Ottawa, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau addressed the country after the throne speech.
The second wave isn't just starting. It's already underway. The numbers are clear. Back on March 13th, when we went into lockdown, there were 47 new cases of COVID-19. Yesterday alone, we had well over 1,000. We're on the brink of a fall that could be much worse than the spring. I know this isn't the news that any of us wanted to hear. And we can't change today's numbers or even tomorrow's. Those were already decided by what we did or didn't do 2 weeks ago. But what we can change is where we are in October and into the winter. It's all too likely we won't be gathering for Thanksgiving, but we still have a shot at Christmas.
Election Day in British Columbia is October 24th. Elections BC is expecting more than 35% of votes by mail, which means it could be mid-November before BC knows who will form the next government. Keep reading the Breaker.News for election news. So who will win British Columbia's 42nd general election? To try to get that answer, I turn to Mario Canseco, a friend of the Breaker.News podcast. Mario Canseco is president of Research Co., and he did the first opinion poll of the 2020 campaign.
Mario, you looked at the parties, the leaders, and the issues. First of all, on party popularity, the NDP has the support of 44% of decided voters going into this campaign. That's 7% better than the BC Liberals. Do the BC Liberals have a chance to close this gap?
There's certainly an opportunity for the Liberals to do better. One of the things that is quite remarkable, going back to our survey in May, is that the momentum is with the two major parties. The NDP is up 3 points. The Liberals are actually up 4 points, so they gained a lot more ground than what we see with the Greens and the Conservatives, who are dropping very, very rapidly. Difficult situation for the Greens with a leader that has been anointed very recently and is running a very different campaign where you no longer have access to a lot of situations where you can meet voters directly. For the BC Conservatives, again, the issue is, will they run candidates in every riding? How much of an effect will they have? And whether people who are right now looking at the Conservatives as an option end up going back to the Liberals, which would suggest that the race is actually a little bit closer than what we see right now. But ultimately, you know, there's not a lot of immediate animosity related to the decision to call the election. We saw a drop in the numbers for John Horgan personally from 73% back in May to 67% in September. It's a 6-point drop, but he still gets the support of 2/3 of voters who are happy with the way things are going. That being said, we're in a situation where the one thing that the government cannot control is the pandemic. They can figure out what type of things they want to talk about when they have a specific release that deals with an issue that voters may care about. But if we have another outbreak, if we have something that happens in a school, if we have something that is affecting the way British Columbians look at this pandemic, then the issue of accountability might start to percolate.
Do you think that First Now can sustain this throughout the campaign and make a viable push to be a third party leader in the mold of Andrew Weaver, who brought the Greens to prominence during the last campaign?
Well, it's a difficult undertaking because of two reasons. You know, we saw the best numbers for the Green Party happening with Andrew Weaver at the helm, partly because of how deeply respected he is when it comes to academic life and also his expertise when it comes to climate change. It will be difficult to try to sustain that same level of support with somebody who's fairly new to this game, particularly with the constraints of a campaign like the one we are going to be seeing. And it's always difficult to try to figure out that your strategy is to hammer people on accountability. You know, we saw it in the last federal election. The first couple of weeks, Andrew Scheer was definitely discussing the SNC-Lavalin affair and saying that Justin Trudeau couldn't be trusted. It didn't give him as much of a bump in the polls as many were expecting. And I think it might be a similar scenario here, particularly when the Greens are facing the other challenge, which is fielding candidates everywhere and trying to become a more viable third party outside of Southern Vancouver Island. So it's not going to be as easy as it was last time to climb the charts and to get to 17%, which is what they got the last time.
Now, as for the issues, 1 in 4 voters rate healthcare as their top issue. We are in a year that is a pandemic year, so that's not really a surprise. But what other issues did the respondents to your poll identify, and were there any surprises there?
Well, one of the things that has been consistent, especially when we go back to the start of the campaign in 2017, is concerns about housing, homelessness, and poverty. And this is definitely a more prevalent issue for British Columbians who will vote in the election and who are 18 to 34. So millennials, younger adults, more likely to be worried about housing. I think we'll see a lot of announcements related to this, particularly because the NDP doesn't want to lose these voters to the Greens. If anything, one thing that was quite surprising was how low the environment is at 7%. You know, usually you have this as an issue that is in double digits, particularly with all of the discussions surrounding climate change. And this also makes it tougher for the Greens to try to appeal to voters who are more environmentally conscious, if many of these voters are right now more likely to be concerned with the economy and jobs or with healthcare. And it makes it much more complicated for them to try to talk to these voters and say, elect more Greens and we'll be able to keep the government, whether it is formed by the NDP or by the Liberals, in check with the issues that you care about.
How would you grade the leader's performance, the party's performance so far?
It's been quite interesting to watch, because ultimately what we're seeing here is the type of strategy that needs to be had because of the way in which this COVID campaign is going to be working. The Liberals are usually great at going to places, meeting candidates, shaking hands, filling gyms with people, and having the leader meeting local candidates. That's the way in which Gordon Campbell ran his campaigns and the way Christy Clark ran her campaigns. And it's a completely different situation now, where they're essentially reacting to whatever the NDP wants to talk about. It's difficult for people to get to know Andrew Wilkinson this way, certainly when you compare it to the way in which we got to know John Horgan 4 years ago, for instance. So it's been interesting that they're hammering on the issue of the actual timing of the election. And that might be a story for the next couple of days. It might come back to become more of an issue related to the accountability of the government if COVID-19 begins to climb the charts. But at this stage, I think they would be better suited focusing on other issues, particularly economy and jobs and economic recovery, where they usually do very well. For the NDP, having the ability to know when this is happening and to actually plan for it, some of the events really haven't gone that smoothly, particularly the announcement of the campaign itself. So definitely a lot of work to do there. Sometimes it doesn't look like the government is the one that is running for re-election. It still looks like an opposition campaign party, and they definitely need to work out some of those difficulties that they're facing in the first few days. And for the Greens, it's ultimately a fight about recognition. You know, there's a lot of people who don't know who Sonia Furstenau is. They need to connect in a very different way if they want to keep those voters from 2017.
That's Mario Canseco, president of Research Co. on the Breaker.News podcast.
John Horgan.
Andrew Wilkinson.
Sonia Furstenau.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to teachers of British Columbia who are back in school and doing their best to educate the future leaders of society. Here is hoping that teachers and students stay healthy during the pandemic. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 27th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on September 27th in 1928, the United States recognized the Republic of China, which eventually relocated to Taiwan? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. PATREON.com/TheBreakerNews.
Until next week.